Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham and we are still blowing leads in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it's been a bit of a mixed week here on Planet Albion. First, we surrendered another lead after being 2-0 up against Spurs last Saturday, but in truth, a point was probably more than we deserved against Thomas Frank's improving team. And then on Tuesday, we travelled to Barnsley in the League Cup and hit them for six, with Diego Gomez having his very own goal of the season competition, netting four times and becoming the first Albion player to do so since Glenn Murray in 2009. Our League Cup record this season now reads six love, six love. Can we finish the set in the next round? On Saturday, we head to Chelsea as we try and gain our first points on the road this season, but it's unlikely to be friends reunited as we face João Pedro for the first time since he left in the summer. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Tom Hyland. And following the release of a powerful new video and joining together against a suicide campaign, we welcome back Dean Gallagher from the Brighton Samaritans. Hello, everybody. It's been an interesting week. We'll start with you, Tom. You've just got back in the country and you decided to, you know, I've got to get it back from Madagascar and I think I need some more wildlife. So you went to Barnsley.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a natural thing to do as an Albion fan, right? You know, fly for 15 hours and then think, well, what sounds great is 6 hours on a coach. So...
I'm surprised you didn't do something like fly straight to Doncaster Airport instead.
Yeah, because there's direct flights to Doncaster from Madagascar, isn't there? Of course there is. But and Dean, welcome back as well. It's been a bit of a whirlwind week for you as well with the launch of the new campaign and obviously the launch of the fantastic new video.
Yeah, Saturday was kind of wild, really, that we launched the emotional support at the ground, the Amex. And then they asked me to do a Q&A before the game and then a halftime interview on the pitch with Jonathan from the Fan Advisory Board. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. And the fact that the film has resonated so well with so many people and the reach is exactly what we were hoping for. Actually, probably exceeds our expectations. So, AD, it's just fantastic what's happening.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that very shortly, but let's just get Spurs out the way because, well, we didn't lose, so that's a good thing. It's another point to the total, but it was just a very, very frustrating afternoon, Al.
It wasn't a great performance. Clearly, Spurs were a lot better than they were last season. I mean, it's one of those bizarre things. They had an appalling season in the league and still ended up winning a European trophy, which by that metric, we should be winning three Champions Leagues every year. Because last year, Spurs were just no good. Having said that, they've clearly improved in most areas, except thankfully the most important one, which is their finishing. Their finishing was worse than anything that we ever had under Graham Potter. That said, we couldn't trap a bag of cement. There were too many players once again off their game. It's easy to point fingers, so I'm going to. I'm looking at you, Jorginho Rutter, who was way too easily bullied by Romero. You had Mitoma. Did he turn up? Was he there? He basically left Kadioglu on his own to defend against a very, very tricky winger. I mean, I think Ferdy, his man of the match award was well deserved on account of the fact that he was doing what he was doing. He was beaten a couple of times, but then you're up against a decent winger. But other times he was, you know, holding his own. But like I say, without a great deal of support from Mitoma, that's not to say that we've suddenly become a bad side. Of course not. But let's face it, we went 2-0 up. Thankfully, there were aspects of Spurs' defence which was just abysmal. So it's just one of those things. I think Spurs are in a kind of a transition period themselves. And we probably played at the right time. If they carry on improving the way they are or have been, then if we'd have played them, say, October, November, I think we might have struggled, especially as there's far too many players in our side at the moment, I feel. They've not necessarily regressed, but they really haven't sort of kicked on. And let's face it, AD, you're going to, at some point, have another little whine about Carlos Baliba, aren't you?
Yeah, possibly.
Unless someone else wants to.
I mean, it definitely wasn't him that gave the ball away when the Spurs got their pulled one back at all. But I was going to come in on Mitoma there. I mean, he's got so much credit in the bank. He's allowed to have an off day.
Of course.
There have been, so far this season, there's been quite a lot of players that have been having 5 and 6 out of 10 performances.
Yeah.
Which is at the same time.
If Mitoma was going to have an off day, I'd rather he had it against Barnsley, frankly.
Had a night off day.
Well, he did, but I mean, Danny Welbeck, actually. I mean, let's bring Dean in here. You're at the game as well, obviously. Is our grumbling sort of kind of justified, or do you think we're being a little bit harsh?
Just before you started to talk, I was trying to actually think of my thoughts about, okay, what did I think about the game? And I thought, before the game, would I have settled for a point? Possibly. They have improved. Did we play well? No. And I think, armed with all of that, it was frustrating. Belabor, I don't know quite what's going on there, but Ayari had a good game. And I think everyone seemed to try and buzz around. Minte tried to work really hard. Joel Veltman had his normal type of game. We played okay without being outstanding, and to get a 2-2 draw. But as ever, if you go 2-0 up in a Premier League game, you've got to try and finish them off, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were some other issues. I mean, Tom, we've seen this before from him, but and he usually, this is in regards to Fabian, he usually does affect the game with his substitutions in a positive sense, but the substitutions in this game kind of left me scratching my head a little bit. When you've got a player like Yankuba Minter on the pitch, and I've been critical of Minter quite a lot over since.
Have you really?
Well, yeah, but I mean, what I will say, he so far this season, you can see the visible improvement in him, and he is getting better and better and better. And he was having an outstanding game at the weekend. Spurs were running petrified of him. And then on the other side, you've got Mitoma, who's having an off day.
A bit like you.
Yeah, always having an off day. I'm so tired. He takes off Mitoma rather than... Minte rather than Mitoma to bring on Coppola. And it's like, it just didn't seem to be
actually, of all the substitutions, that's the one that made the most sense, because, like I say, for most of the game, we couldn't keep it. And Spurs were in serious danger of actually getting a winner. So to shore up the defence made a lot of sense. And I also get the point, and I think that both Potter and De Zerbi, and I think probably Hertzler have kind of intimated this, that they keep Mitoma on no matter how good or bad a game he's having, because he always has that one piece of magic within him.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't... His game that day was so bad that I'd have... Yeah, it's... and let's face it, we were talking about, what, 5 minutes to go? I think that one, I'm not going to, I don't disagree with the whole thing of Coppola coming on. I do take your point about which winger should have come off, but by then it was a case of just make sure
it was on 75 minutes. So there's still 15 minutes plus injury time.
Was it as early as that?
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of part of a broader trend so far this season, is actually when ahead, it's almost, kind of reversion to the early Potter days, in the sense of make substitutions to try and hold on to it rather than look to try and cement your position and back yourself. I know Saturday was obviously slightly harder with the pressure coming on, but you know, I always find that if we make more positive substitutions, we can generally gain from that. And Hertzler has shown already last season, this season, that when we're behind, we can be very, very good. He can change the game as a positive. But what's that now? The fourth, fifth, maybe even more times that we've surrendered a 2-goal lead since the start of last season. That's quite a lot when you're 2-0 up.
To be fair, though, it's not as though there were 2-goal leads with sort of like 3 minutes to go. Those are the ones that really wind you up. And let's face it, you're kind of expecting Spurs to score. But in both cases, they were, although you know, like I say, we couldn't keep the ball. First one, we had several opportunities to belt the ball into row Z. And the second one was an own goal, which, yeah, they're always avoidable. But, I mean, it was... Yeah. If it hadn't have gone in like that, it would have probably gone in via another method. It was just one of those days.
It is just a worrying trend, though, Al, because, I mean, obviously we've had 3 games at home this season. Man City, yay. We got that one right, and we came away with the points. But the other two, obviously Spurs and Fulham, conceded an equaliser in the 80th minute plus.
But if you're talking about the sort of mental attitude of closing out a game, let's face it, we closed out the game by not conceding anymore, because the goals were scored in, well, one was in the first half and the other one was, what, halfway through the second half? I lose track, but so it's not...
Against Spurs, 83rd minute, the equaliser.
Okay, that was it. Okay, but the point I'm making here is that the fact that you're 2-0 up does not necessarily automatically mean that you're in control of the game. Far from it. And we've shown that. Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. We showed it last season against Spurs themselves. So that aspect of it is... I think, again, slightly antiquated thinking that, oh, you're 2-0 up. Yes, once you get the third, and we did have opportunities to do that, once you get the third, then the mindset changes again. But whilst it's 1-0, certainly, and whilst it's 2-0, you're far from safe until the final whistle. So in that sense, I think it's a bit like the attitude of, if you have a player sent off, what do you change? Well, not a great deal. You just carry on as best you can. Once you go down to 9 or 8, then you're in trouble. Okay. So it's And this is the conversation we had after the game, AD, was we were talking about the England women in the Euros earlier in the summer for the knockout games, the quarter, semi and the final. And they all went to, I think they all went to extra time, didn't they? We were ahead for about 4 minutes of that, or whatever
it
was.
32 seconds to be exact, yes.
Something like that. So it's all about where you're at the end of the game, not the it's actually, oddly enough, it's about the destination, not the journey.
Okay. Well, let's look at the positives from the game, though. So, I mean, like I said, we didn't lose, and we sounded like we did. It's just like when you concede a late equaliser, it does often leave the building as if you have just lost, doesn't it? So we've got a 6-0 to talk about. So let's get on with this one and put this one to bed. The positives. We've already mentioned Kadiolu. He had a great game. Brian Gruder started again. He had a fantastic game, I thought. And I mentioned him earlier. Yankuba Minte was sensational in this game.
Dane.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't disagree with any of that. I thought there were a huge amount of positives to take from the game. Yeah, okay, we got pegged back. But as ever, Premier League football was about hitting on the opponent when they make mistakes and when you get those opportunities. And we almost did it, but we didn't quite. So, yeah, it's a point. We move forward. That's fine.
Remember. Okay. And the goal from Minte, it was a lovely breakaway goal. We almost scored a similar one against Barnsley as well, which we'll talk about shortly. But this one did actually find the back of the net, just about onside by a shirt sleeve, by the looks of it. He still had a lot to do. But I mean, I know you were critical with him earlier, Al, but it was such a great ball from Jorginho to put Minte through.
Oh, it was great stuff. And like I say, I mean, he found his space between the defenders. And they never really caused him. If you watch it again, he rarely has the ball under full control. But it's the way he took it past the keeper, who I think possibly went down too early. And this is where I want to bring Tom in here, because, Tom, how often do we cock up a one-on-one?
This season or in general? Because
just ever since you started watching.
Well, we grew up watching Gary Nelson, so you know he never missed
and
them.
Yeah, and then along came Neil Maupay. No, yeah. it was a beautiful finish. I mean, I think he showed you how you finish off a 1-1, and he himself has cocked that sort of thing up himself. But yeah, beautifully done. And it looked great. And I think he made the Spurs defence look a bit like mugs, really.
Yeah.
We've seen
Jan Kuba in that position before, and I still have nightmares about the game at Southampton where he completely devon-locked it. And
my point exactly. Okay, you've just I think highlighted a really good example there.
where
he refused to use his right foot.
Yeah. And so the fact that we actually had got that breakaway and he had a clean set of heels to put pressure on the Spurs defence and had the foresight of mind to get around the keeper and just tap it in was wonderful. But wasn't the goal of the game. In fact, it was Yassin Ayari had a goal of the week contender.
Tommy only belts his goals, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's a couple of players that just seem to score kind of worldies now. And Ayari, I mean, you know, I think him and Gomez are having a competition amongst themselves for who has the fastest shot in the squad. So it's always nice to see them go in, though.
Do you think there's a policeman with a speed gun there watching it trying to...
But isn't it nice to see a player that can actually shoot?
Oh, that's actually allowed to shoot from outside the box. That's something this week that's been nice to see.
Yeah. But, I mean, is that the best goal you've seen from that spot on the Amex? I mean, I'm calling it a Squared-O corner. It's been a few from there. I mean, Belaba scored from there. Squared-O got a couple from there. I think even Ayari got one last season from there.
And yet, weirdly enough, you don't have those ones at the other end, do you? The ones that were from when you're watching from the West Stand upper, you're right behind the line of the ball. That's not fair, is it? Well, I demand to see goals that I want to see.
Yuri Skalak.
Well, exactly. Well, we'll come back to that one as well. Dean, I mean, we've got to move on from this one because otherwise we will, you know, have to start talking about matters that we don't want to talk about. What do you feel? 2 points dropped or a point gained?
Point gained.
Concise.
Concise, Tom.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I would also go a point gained purely, I think, you know, we can talk about the games that we've played so far this season. But I think, you know, comparing the same teams to last year's kind of a silly thing to do because a lot of those teams are doing so much better at this point in the season. So, yeah, it's still a plus one for me.
I think Dean's concise answer there, Ady, says let's move on.
I think it really does, doesn't it? So he's always a good Samaritan, which is ironic because that's what we're going to talk about. Dean, there's a new campaign. For those who were at the game on Saturday and for those who have seen social media and Dean's interview, you mentioned that you know, there's 11 clubs involved in this. That's an awful lot of people who see these sort of things on social media. And that's 90 million eyes that will see this sort of thing. How important is that to you and to this campaign in particular?
I think it's incredible because one of the things... Several of the things we talk about as Samaritans is to talk to people that suicide is not inevitable. And actually, the Samaritans' mission is that fewer people die by suicide, which is a very simple concept. But actually, the more people you can talk to, and actually, the Premier League's objectives when they started this campaign was to actually raise the awareness of suicide, to reduce the stigma around suicide and also to increase the help-seeking behaviours of fans. And that last bit is so crucial because actually, if you think about it, it's about talking and listening. If we can start to do that, you're changing what we do and how we do it, and you're going to move the needle. Whether we move it by one or several or thousands, we're going to do it. You know, suicide is the biggest killer of men under 50.
Mm.
Okay, so
there's a great stat that every 90 minutes,
yes,
someone in the UK takes their own life.
Okay, so Dean, tell us how this particular campaign started. It starts with the Spandau Ballet family, doesn't it?
It certainly does. So Roman Kemp, went to the Premier League board, and he used his position in the media to great effect. He's someone that's had his own troubles, as I'm sure you all know. And if you don't, please do look it up. And he went to Premier League 2 years ago, and the Premier League board gave him a very good hearing, and they then debated it. And basically the first board to actually get on board with this was the Albion's board. Paul Barber signed us up for it immediately, which, yeah, people get bad reps along the way, but actually it's incredible that we've got so far behind it. And I can tell you from personal experience that actually Tony Bloom and Paul Barber are 100% behind this. The amount of resource they're devoting to in and around the club and the stadium, they're leaving no stone unturned, and they're giving us access to the stadium. They're letting us basically take over days. It's great. And they're raising the awareness. This isn't just about Samaritan. This is about suicide prevention. However people get their help, that's great. It doesn't matter.
I mean, one of the main things with this, and Tom, you know about this as well, is basically getting blokes to talk. I mean, and let's not forget, this isn't just all about men, this is women as well, but it's just that particularly with guys having that conversation, there is that a stigma attached to it still.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think it's such a fantastic campaign, Dean, and the video is superb. And, you know, I, over the last few years, lost a few friends to suicide as well. And you always wonder, you know, what if? And you always have those questions of, actually, why didn't you know? Why didn't we know? So anything that can really help reduce the stigma around people being able to talk, be open, I think also helping you reach out to your friends that you might think or notice anything different in them at a game or when you meet up, I think is really important. So, you know, hopefully this really helps with the Albion and kind of the community around it being able to be there for each other and support each other.
We'll go on to the backstory of the film in a minute, Dean, if I may. But there's just something that occurs to me, and I hope I'm not talking out of turn here. Now, obviously, you're talking about suicide prevention, and your work in the Samaritans. Obviously, you're going to talk to a lot of people, and you're at the coal face of this, and I'd imagine you probably have to deal with this on a kind of a daily basis, an hourly basis. Now, we're talking about suicide prevention, but to sort of kind of paraphrase Tony Blair, is there any work that's being undertaken that takes this any further of tough on suicide, tough on the causes of suicide kind of thing? Is there a kind of a pattern you see as to the narrative of the conversations behind people, men who are struggling?
I think basically it's about once the whole video came out, what I've had, and this is anecdotally, Alan, actually, that I've had four separate people come and talk to me, and it's changing that conversation. People that have lost people that their family members are struggling to open up. It's all about that. You're trying to create a conduit for people to actually feel ready to open up.
So you're amongst the phone calls, I imagine you get then, is not necessarily just from people who have picked up the phone and said, I'm struggling, but also I guess that probably, and I think that we all seem to be part of this, that we know someone who has ended it. That you also speak to people who are friends, not necessarily they feel that way, but they actually come back to you to say, to try and make head or tail of what's happened to their friend.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that when you speak to people that are on the edge, it's often they're explaining what they may do, what they feel like doing, and how they're going to do it. You speak to other people that recognize other people are vulnerable. and you then talk through. And one of the things that we absolutely genuinely believe in, it's, yes, it's about talking, but as Samaritans, we listen. And it's amazing what truly listening to people actually does.
Can you give us a, without sort of obviously giving names or anything like that, can you give us a for instance there? Because I'm not 100% sure what you mean, what you get from it. I think sounds like what you're saying is what you get from it.
So what I get from it?
Yeah. When you say, okay, what it's amazing when you truly listen. What?
So because, I'll come back to my experience as a Samaritan in a second, but actually the person that's talking, to have someone that's not answering back their questions and not telling them what they should be feeling or how they should be doing it, is actually listening and truly listening to them and repeating back to them so they can assemble their thoughts as to how they want to feel. AD, sorry.
And part of this whole campaign is training 1901. I can't think where you got that number from. Training 1901 people to listen like a Samaritan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very shallow dive into what we do and how we do it, but actually it's a 2-hour course where people, they'll watch some videos, they'll go through some of the concepts that we do. There's role play. It's intense. It's very, very, it's user-friendly. We have experienced people there. And also we have, because some of these things can be triggering. So we have people on hand to make sure that if they are triggered, that we deal with that. And we help pick up the pieces. But absolutely, AD. Yeah, I mean, we're looking to train up to and beyond, you know, as many trainers as we've got. We're trying to do this interactive. We're trying to do this person to person rather than actually just deliver something and people watch a video and tick a box. We're actually trying to make a difference here.
Yeah, and there can't be too many, can there?
No, and that's the point really. But actually the Albion have given up Lansing and also the Amex for some of those training days, and we're splitting it over, I think we've got 10 in for this year up until the end of December, and we'll start another batch early in the new year. And actually, there's a number of people that have already reached out to me separately saying, we really want to come on this. So there is interest already.
How does one apply to come on this then?
So it's initially being rolled out via supporters groups. And then there'll be certain training days that people sign up for. And it's all free. And what they'll do when they have been through the training and attended it, they'll get a nice little pin badge that the Albion have created. So it's certain things like that that we're just trying to help in whatever way we can. And I'm just going to actually go on to say that the other plank of this campaign is we're offering emotional support to all the women's and men's home matches, as well as any beanbags as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that because it's quite a lot of it. I mean, you're doing it in the East Stand, aren't you?
Yes.
But there's also a lot of it's all about visibility, having someone there wearing your high-vis stuff, which you look very fetching in, by the way.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, it's just and the fact that you are doing it at the women's games and you are doing it. Are you doing it away games as well?
No. The Albion wanted just to dip our toe in the water by doing beanbags. I'm not saying no, we wouldn't. It's no, not right now. So this is a pilot campaign where the Albion they've really pushed themselves and us to actually write what will make a difference. And I think this is the key, really, that the campaign we've got right now will not be the campaign we have at the end. Because it's a pilot scheme, it's going to bend with whatever works and what doesn't work.
Sure.
And that's the key.
Now, talking of things that did work, let's talk about the film itself. Because, I mean, one thing that people have done is talking about the fact, what was it, 18 months ago, 2 years ago, I think it was, that Norwich City produced a video.
Yes.
Now that was a real punch in the stomach, whereas this film for me felt like kind of more like an arm around the shoulder. And there's obviously more than one way to put this message across. But tell us, give us the kind of the background sort of behind the camera details as to how this project, who funded it, how it was funded, and the actors and the people who came up with the concepts and who got involved. Give us the lowdown on this.
So it was 4 months ago that we really got connection with the Albion and we got the green light. Okay, they wanted to proceed with us exclusively to provide the support for the whole campaign, which was a massive thing for our branch. We're 220 volunteers, but all volunteers. So we were talking about, okay, what do we do? And one of the things they were adamant is that they wanted their film. There's going to be a central Premier League film that's being commissioned, but the Albion wanted something that the fans can identify with and actually makes it quite kind of real. So on behalf of the Albion and the Premier League, we went out and we went to three film companies, two of which we had connection with, one of which we didn't. And the one we didn't was the one that actually we chose. It's Be The Fox, who are Brighton-based. So it's a real local collaboration, which feels really good. And I can say that I was at the filming, that was on the 31st of August, the Man City game, and the guys were just fantastic. They were on site, as were we, at 7 in the morning at the Amex, and they finished up shooting in Brighton, I think it was about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. Mm-hmm. So it was a full day. It's funded by the Premier League, and I suspect it's, I'm not going to tell you how much, but I suspect it's the best money that they've ever invested in their life. Mm. It's incredible.
Who came up with the concept? You know, because obviously there's any number of storylines that could have been written. Was that the club? Was that you? Who came up with that?
I'd love to say it was me, but actually it was Be The Fox. That they were tremendous. One of the things that actually differentiated them was actually being a fan of many years standing. The whole concept about coming to the game, it felt quite real. And that's what I really liked. And I liked the fact that actually the ending felt really quite a normal thing that we all might do, actually. Mm. So it felt real right from the very off. And the fact that the guys are local, and the fact that they've got some lived experience of suicide as well, it tapped into a nerve there. It was so warming. And the fact that right from the very start, nothing has been too much trouble for them as well.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, it can't be that realistic. The train was on time, so you know.
Sure, but I think the point about the film and certainly that the payoff at the end there was, like you say, it was realistic. I mean, I'm going to say this. I'm going to embarrass him a little bit. I've sort of like hit the dark lands. I spent 3.5 years out of work, and one of the things that AD did was every probably couple of weeks or so, he'd be on the phone to me and say, "Look, is everything all right?" Usually, whether it was kind of very well disguised along the lines of what we're doing for the show, but I also realised probably with hindsight, the subtext was just checking that I was okay. In other words, was I going to answer the phone? And that kind of thing, I do appreciate and have appreciated, even though I never told you really, Eddie. So thank you so much. And it's I think AD himself gets it, and I think probably the rest of us in that sense probably could. You think of your friends, but you don't necessarily call them. And in the point about the end of the film here, the payoff is, are you all right? And you can see the bloke is clearly struggling. Oh, man, where do I start? Great line to finish on. Is that it just hits the universal chord. You don't have to be a Brighton fan. I think everyone who's not a Brighton fan who's watched it can actually just transpose that. But it's a bit like watching the Norwich one. Well, yeah, they're wearing their yellow and green, but that could be the blue and white. It could be your team's colours. So I think the fact that it's not a Brighton fan, if you're not a Brighton fan, watching a Brighton fan sort of cheering on his team, it hits the universal chord of forget the fact it's the Albion. It's football. Yeah. It's two blokes. It's life.
Tom?
Was that sort of... I mean, did you have a say in that, you know, before it was actually done?
that was the ending that was agreed. That was why the pitch worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Tom.
Yeah. Just whilst you were talking there, Al, kind of got me thinking. Football's really interesting kind of area within the community as well, because actually it's friends, but friends that probably don't know everything about you, that you see every week or every couple of weeks at games, and that you're quite comfortable with. But it's also, I think sometimes that's kind of really good ingredients for people to ask if you're okay or to listen to, because actually you're comfortable enough to talk with those people, and you have that kind of connection through the Albion in this case and football, but actually that bigger story you're not always aware of. So I just think that kind of football lens through that's always quite an interesting one to have.
Because the other thing with that, Tom, is as well, you probably do get a much better picture, because if you're seeing someone every day, you might not notice the tiny little details or something, the way someone might change. Or if you're seeing them once every week or once every couple of weeks, and we all have our routines pre-match, and that's one of the things that comes out in the film, is the fact that it's about that match day routine, isn't it?
Yes.
Even the little subtle things of the bloke not having a pie, is that a trigger? Is that a motion? Is that a warning? It's probably very easy if you're going to put that into a real life scenario, which, let's say, the film largely conveys. But if you're going to put that into a real life scenario, I suppose there is a risk of overthinking it. Oh my God, he's not having a pie. Is everything all right? But like I say, the flags are there, and I think that, and I don't think even necessarily blokes don't notice it. I think sometimes they do, and then just, I'm not saying don't do anything about it. It's at the back of their mind, and then wonder what they can do about it. And this is where Dean, hopefully, I guess this is the central message that you're trying to put across, is that if you do think you notice something, go on.
Yeah, and actually all I was going to say and add to that, Al, was that it's that the thing that we've been encouraged to do for the last little while is that, are you okay? You sure you're okay? That's just that second check-in that actually people may say, no, I am fine, but, and they then open up about something else. And one of the things, as I think AD alluded to, is that actually, walking around the stadium, actually, we've had a number of decent chats and actually talking to people. Often people come up and say, thank you. When people say, thank you, you saved my life, it is most humbling. And when people say, thank you, you were there for me. It's all of this that this isn't meant to be, Aunt Samaritan's great. I think the Samaritan service is great because I've been doing it for 3 years. But actually, it's more about, the fact that there is an organisation, a body out there that is prepared to actually just to listen and to volunteer and not charge anything, I think is pretty special.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be good,
Tom, you had another point?
I just wanted to kind of say I don't think there's anything that could ever prompt someone asking, are you okay, too many times. I think, if that's the outcome of it and someone sees the smallest change in someone and ends up asking, is everything okay? Then that's a net positive.
Yeah. And Dean, obviously, for anyone who hasn't seen or seen any of the campaign, how do they contact yourselves?
So in terms of getting in touch with Samaritans, if they want emotional support, it's to call 116 123. If you want to reach out to Samaritans more broadly, there's email addresses on the website. What we try not to do is create emotional dependence on any one Samaritan and on the organisation. So please do reach out centrally. But that would seem to be the most pertinent way.
Okay. All right. You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, Alan, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Flowers Unlimited of 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. Albion fan Dave Costa, thank you very much indeed for sponsoring this show. You can get your flowers, champagne, chocolates, all sorts of presents for your loved ones, your missus, if they happen to be the same person. Just head down there or just go to flowersunlimited.co.uk and you can get your stuff there. And of course, if you tell them you're an Albion season ticket holder, like Dave himself is, you automatically get your 20% discount. If you want to haggle after that, that's between you and them. I'm not going to say anything. But yes, Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And thank you, Dave, for your continued support.
Right, OK. So Tuesday night, the Albion travelled to South Yorkshire to witness what can only be called Diego Gomez. And
how long did you spend writing that one?
Not long enough, clearly. Tom, wow.
Yeah, I mean, if we only ever played lower league opposition in the League Cup, it seems.
Can we just point out that when we're recording this, by the time you hear this, we'll know who we're playing in the fourth round. We just say we're doing this, what, 2-3 hours before the draw. So don't blame us if we end up with Chelsea. Carry on, Tom.
So yeah, when we play Wrexham in the next round.
Good, right. I'll take Grimsby.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real kind of one-man show of foot strength, really, up in Barnsley this week. I don't know.
Is Barnsley the home of the traction engine? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, but I think what I've quite enjoyed is the reaction of quite a lot of Barnsley fans comparing Diego Gomez to Pelé, saying that it's the best individual display they've ever seen at Oakwell and that kind of stuff. And we're like, I mean, it was good, but, you know, it's all right. He just seems to score those goals, doesn't he? But yeah, I mean, the third one to seal his hat trick was special. I think the way that I've likened it is those old plastic balls you used to pick up in the petrol station. And when you
shoot, I believe they're called shoot,
and
they?
It just went everywhere in the air. That was kind of the equivalent of that goal.
Weren't you behind the opposite goal then, and sort of you saw its trajectory then?
Yeah, and what was weird, no one really cheered. It was more that gasp of, wow, what was that? So it was a bit weird in the stand to my point of view. But you were just right behind it, and the movement on it was unlike anything I think I've ever seen live anyway.
The weird thing is just with the shot itself, and let's face it, I've probably watched it 20 or 30 times since just because, you know, all right, I might be 56 at the end of the week, but you know, I'm still 6 years old at times. There was very little backlift and very little follow through. I don't know if you noticed that. I don't know if you care actually, Tom, but it's just that whole thing.
It's fine.
Okay, all right. Well, you talk us through the dynamics of the backlift and the follow through then.
Oh no, I can't do that. I'm not skilled enough for that.
And let's face it, that dwarfs the second goal, which was a bit of a peach in its own right.
I mean, yeah, the second goal was a very pure hit for me. He just got such a good connection, and once it left his foot, it was only going one place and didn't divert from that course.
Sure. I mean, Wouldn't it be nice if he could save those for the Premier League, though? I mean, even if he just split them over two different games. So,
but to be fair, the goal he scored at Spurs was pretty similar, to be fair.
Yeah, it was kind of a sort of a curler into the top corner in the 90th minute. But, you know, but, hey, they all count, you know. It's
but,
fine.
I mean, obviously, he walked away with the match ball plus one. With this,
but say, is there a special prize for that, then, for scoring a fourth goal?
I don't know. You get a third of a ball, I suppose. I don't know.
A handshake with Glenn Murray.
Yeah. Photo op. But yeah, but it was, it probably shouldn't have been the first, probably shouldn't have scored the first goal of the game. That should have been Stefano Simas, who was put through bizarrely by Diego Gomez.
Dean, did you watch this game at all?
I watched some of it. And I, it was just sensational. It was like a greatest hits type of montage, wasn't it? It was just insane. Every time we went forward, we thought, right, okay. And we looked so fluid at times. It was great. Really good.
And yet, and I think, well, AD and myself were on the same WhatsApp group. We were getting a bit frustrated at times, weren't we, AD?
Yes.
Who's your Irie mostly based on, mostly fired at? and you're going to say it's unfair because he got three assists, aren't you?
The guy who's now got Glenn Murray's number.
Right.
I think that's unfair. I do.
Yeah, I mean, he did give away a silly yellow card, and I think he probably came up. Well, he allowed Ayari to come on, so that's fine. Yes, it probably is a little bit unfair on Tom Watson because, there was a couple of times
he hasn't got Glenn Murray's number. No,
no, but I know we've already had a go at Belieber, so I mean, he's going to get a complex if he ever listens to this. No, Watson. Someone I think who probably got a little bit of an arse kicking at half time because he was certainly a lot better in the second half. He did look a little bit of a rabbit in the headlights. Fair play, it's his debut, but he's used to playing. He has been used to playing at places like Barnsley, and so I don't know, maybe stage fright. But yeah, he got better into the game, and I'd say the stats are you can't argue with three assists,
hat trick of assists. Yeah,
absolutely.
I thought he was a slightly overlooked player in the game yesterday. I thought he had a lot of very nice touches on the ball.
Yeah.
Some really good footwork to get out of it and quite tricky to play against. And I thought he showed a lot of promise there for us. I think, you know, he clearly could be better taking his man on. Mm-hmm. Especially out wide and going in towards the box. But yeah, I thought he had a good game. And I mean, some of the little layoffs that he made to put people into positions were fabulous and just really deft touches.
Yeah. I mean, his control let him down at times, which I found very frustrating, particularly when you see the normal incumbent in that role was Kuru Mitoma, who's first touch, apart from the weekend, is absolutely sensational. But it was, you know, yeah. But I mean, it was a hat trick of assists. I mean, and the best assist was probably the one for Harry Howell, actually.
And let's face it, that included two Welbeck dummies, didn't it? His assist.
Yeah.
So that helped him. So does Welbeck get two dummy assists? Is that a thing? It won't be long before it is.
It's XDA.
Okay, you realise that apparently the XG from last night's game was 1.73, which shows what a farce XG is.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean? It's a bit of a bizarre one, really, isn't it? Because it was very much like this in the last round as well, where we went to a lower league opposition, scored six goals, and against Oxford, Jason Steele was man of the match. And in this one, we went to Barnsley, 1-6-0, and Woodwork was possibly man of the match.
So. And actually, officially, Barnsley had no shots on target.
But, you know, I mean, we're allowing them chances. I mean, the one where he ends up in the back of the net when it hit the bar.
Yeah, that was a bit sloppy from our defence, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
header.
we're allowing these chances, and that's I am a bit concerned about that.
Well, I think that's also possibly down to the fact that, yes, we've got a couple of good centre-half replacements there, but for the time they don't get all this match time, then there's going to be a certain level of ring rustiness, and it was interesting that Van Hecker came on. The one person, of course it's the Diogo Gomes show, but the one person who I was most impressed with, and I think clearly his best game for us, was the creaking, ageing powerhouse that's James Milner. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but he didn't get subbed, did he? And I think that might have been his first game for us where he started and finished, you know, on the first and final whistle.
I think he played the whole game in the last round as well.
Okay, that's possible. But my point is that I actually thought also, possibly in the absence of any other senior players with the possible exception of Veltman, is he was just... He was the fellow who was spraying the pass around, but keeping everyone. He was teacher on the pitch, and Dean. This is the kind of thing that, you know, I think with even though he played against Spurs, it's the kind of thing you absolutely need in order to help close games out. You need that level of experience on the pitch, don't you?
I was just going to go back to the City game where he came on and he changed the dynamic in that game. He was fantastic. He sat in the park and actually used all of his experience and actually some of his little through balls. Yeah, he disrupted play when he needed to. We found the real worth this season so far of him.
Yeah, he came off in the 78th minute at Oxford, by the way. So I sit in.
That was the fastest piece of looking up you've ever done, isn't it?
But I've got it open. It's
Is Tom, is that your take as well that James Milner, like I say, is 40 in January? there's plenty of life left in the old dog, isn't there?
I think what's quite interesting is he didn't do anything spectacular yesterday. And actually, from the stands, nothing he did stood out. He just quietly went about his business and kept it ticking over. It's the same as what, Bissouma, Caicedo, those kind of players did for large parts when they were with us. They just kept that middle ticking over, the engine running. I'll be honest, at times I forgot it was Milner on the pitch.
He left the flashy stuff to the kids, didn't he?
Yeah, and probably looked at them thinking, I'm not running that fast.
Well, the thing is, once you've got Gomez actually hitting worldies for fun from 100 miles out, then you just think, well, what's the point of competing? I'll just put my foot on the ball and then spray the passes around.
But I mean, the question is, with that performance, does that... I mean, obviously, it doesn't guarantee him a starting berth against Chelsea at the weekend by a long stretch, but he's got to be in the conversation now, particularly in the form that belabours him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it gives some headaches to Hertzler for sure. I mean, I thought, again, when Ayari came on, Ayari came on for Gomez, didn't he?
Yeah.
But they both looked...
No,
good.
Ayari came on for Belieber, I think.
I see. It was a long day. It was a long day yesterday.
Madagascar to Barnsley.
Yeah, Barnsley.
the bright lights of Barnsley.
They're both players that can play with each other. So yeah. I think, you know, it's an interesting prospect with Chelsea. And I think we have to go to Chelsea and attack. We can't sit back and let them run at us.
I think the main worry I ever have with Chelsea is repeating the kamikaze offside trap from last season. I think that it's interesting, actually, Adi, that we're saying at the beginning of the season that how sport we are for central midfield choices. And we're not exactly down to the bare bones, but now having lost Hinshelwood for a few weeks and Belieber being horribly off the pace at the moment, and the interesting thing of Hertzler preferring Weaver at one of the fullback berths rather than in the midfield where, you know, he's supposedly a better player or that he's more comfortable. Now, that's not to say that Weaver won't be a consideration at Chelsea, but it now feels as though, I don't know about how you feel about this, Dean, it feels a little bit thin in midfield, doesn't it?
It's kind of odd. We were having this conversation on Saturday with no... Weaver, who, as you quite rightly say, has been preferred as a right back, despite the fact that Joel Veltman looks every inch the proper Premier League fullback we need and want. So, if you're asking me what would I do on Saturday, assuming Weaver's fit, I'd play him centre mid. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's play players in their right position where they flourished before and can flourish surely for us. Surely.
Mm. Yeah, the other thing is that because of the other thing we did last night as well, we reversed Kadioglu and Veltman.
Convinced that worked.
I'm not convinced that one worked. So I mean, I'd quite like to see. I mean, 13 again. He had a decent game, but obviously he got hooked because he got booked. But I mean, I think that he's played himself in at the weekend to start. As left back,
all the while De Kuyper's out, then that's going to be the case. It also shows just I think Veltman did better at left back than Ferdy did at right back. But yeah, Ferdy was done a few times. I mean, can I just sort of point out? I can't remember who said it just now, whether it was Dean or Tom, but I want to come back to you, Tom. When he said he looked at every bit a Premier League fullback. Are we talking about his, I think, what will now be considered legendary outhousery?
I think he's at a similar point in his career as Bruno was towards the end of his time with us before he became all snaky. I think he just is very intelligent player. He knows what his body can and can't do. He reads the game brilliantly. He does the kind of dirty work, gets in his opponent's heads. And I think he is a top-class player. And he also brings a lot of fun to it, to watch him, because I think there was a point yesterday where he was getting fed up of the Barnsley players going down and getting free kicks, that he just decided to go down and didn't get a free kick himself, so got a bit wound up about that. But it's those kind of silly things where he actually brings a bit of personality into his game as well.
Pantomime, we like to call it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think every team must have an outhouser, and I think those that don't are missing out. And that he is clearly it for us at the moment.
Yes. Well, we'll be reintroduced to another one at the weekend in Mark Cucurella, of course. So,
yeah, I mean, he's another gravity. I mean, look, you're right, Tom. The Barnsley were a bunch of gravity whores. They... yeah, they did like the taste of their own grass, didn't they? But, you know, well, what did it get them to nil? Listen, we're getting to near the end of the show here, so I just want to do one quick sign-off before AD does his proper sign-off. Dean, could you give us a recap of if people are feeling up against it and struggling, how they get hold of Samaritans?
Yeah, you can call 116-123, please.
Okay, and I think that's a free, whether it's from a landline or from
absolutely,
a mobile.
Absolutely free.
And that's and is that manned all the time?
Yeah, it's 24/7, 365 days a year.
Okay, well, congratulations on a great film and good luck with the campaign, and obviously anything else that we can do here to help. All we can just say is that, you know, let's kick off the conversation.
And that is all we've got time for. And of course, don't forget, check in on your friends. But thank you to Dean Gallagher. Thank you to Tom Hyland. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Eddie Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on a podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. Keep listening. And we'll see you next week. Bye.